Before we get started, a quick disclosure. This podcast is for entertainment purposes only. Nothing you hear is an offer or a solicitation to buy or sell any investment. With that, hello and welcome to the Rangely Capital Podcast. I'm Andrew Walker, Portfolio Manager at Rangely. With me, as always, my co-host and Rangely's founder, Chris DeMuth. It is Tuesday, December 13th, and today we're going to talk about Trump's pick for the Secretary of State, and then we're going to move on to kind of the spat that never should have happened between hedge fund manager Whitney Tilson and Senator Liz Warren. So, Chris, why don't we start with Trump picking ExxonMobil CEO and Chairman Rex Tillerson for Secretary of State. This has proven kind of controversial. Well, Exxon shareholders love the announcement. Their stock was up 4 or 5% on the day. That's actually $15 billion in market cap move. So that's a real big move for a company. But politicians might like it a little bit less. Their initial reaction's kind of been, we've seen some bipartisan opposition to this. So why don't we talk about it? We can talk about the politics of it, but I kind of want to focus more on the investing implications. So I'll let you take it from there.
Well, if it wasn't a headline of a newspaper, Texan Rex Tillerson could be a fictional character playing Texan oil man coming to Washington to be the new Secretary of State. He looks the part, he acts the part,
really,
and
does.
His name, if I was just going to invent it, would be Rex Tillerson. Perfect name for the role. And I don't want to put it past our president-elect to have that factor in a little bit. In the past, he said Mitt Romney looks like a Secretary of State, and he kind of considered him. Rex Tillerson absolutely looks the part. And he separately mentioned that Mike Pence always looked like the vice president. So maybe that this is some part of the decision-making process.
I wonder what we look like in the Trump administration. Where would Trump throw us?
I don't know. Hopefully successful fund managers. But, you know, I think in some ways the nomination makes sense. First of all, let me say he's completely qualified to do the role. Oil majors have to conduct diplomacy. They go where the dinosaurs died. You know, if you're a banker, you can always go to Switzerland, but oil majors can't. They have to go where there's oil and gas, and you have to deal with all sorts of people in the process.
Yeah, there was an interesting quote in one of the, I think it was in a Wall Street Journal article or something, an analyst said, look, if you're the head of an oil major, you're basically a State Department diplomat, or not State Department, you're basically a diplomat who happens to drill oil wells. So absolutely on that account.
Unilateral sanctions don't work and mostly hurt the country that implements them. And so I think somebody who's had a policy position in the past consistent with that is consistent with his experience at an oil major and consistent with what's really true in terms of the economics. But more than anything, Tillerson's a deal guy. I think he's pragmatic. He's not overly constrained by ideology or party faction. So I think some of the concerns out of Washington are people from party factions or from specific ideologies that wanted one of their guys, and he's not one of their guys.
Yeah, so let me turn it to the deal guy, though. So,
sure.
You know, one of the things you saw, the Donald Trump tweet that said, look, he's a world-class player, he's a deal maker. And one thing I was trying to kind of dig into a little bit this afternoon is, like, is he really a good deal maker? So just some stats I'll throw out. So he took over ExxonMobil January 1st, 2006. And since that time, Exxon stock has performed the S&P 500 and it's underperformed Chevron, just to take a random competitor out there. And most of his big moves, it seems to have failed. So he made a big move to get into a Russian Arctic drilling deal in 2011 that got hit by the sanctions. He poured billions of dollars into the Canadian oil sands, and just late last year or early this year, they had to announce that a lot of those investments aren't ever going to turn a profit. And he spearheaded the acquisition of XTO Energy for $31 billion in 2009. And at the time, there was analyst quotes that said, this is the deal his legacy is going to ride on. And that deal actually kind of turned out to be a disaster. So as a deal man, those are the three big deals of his I saw, and none of them seem like they turned out that well. The stock underperformed. Look, he might be a diplomat, but it doesn't necessarily seem like he was a super shareholder friendly one, to be honest with you. And look, this year the company's been hit with an SEC review over not writing down assets in the face of oil price declines, and they're facing several legal battles with state attorneys over climate change research, which those might be politically driven. But you know, he might be a diplomat, but it doesn't, from a shareholder and investor standpoint, I'm not sure that you're nominating. It doesn't matter. There are no shareholders in the State Department, but I'm not sure he did great by shareholders.
No, I think that's all a good point. And where you left with today, even though it, as you said, underperformed, I think that the scale is a huge problem. It's a huge problem to manage well. I think that it's in the class of mega cap stocks that are too big to get bought. You know, as looking at the stock responding well to him leaving, you have a younger deputy who's going to take over. It's not as if the CEO leaving means Exxon's on the block now. Yeah. Too big to get bought. Pays a respected dividend. It's a kind of cliche mega cap, a stock that is widely followed and owned, and I think very fully priced as of today. And I'll mention in the disclosure, I'm modestly short Exxon today.
Yeah, and let's turn to other investing implications. So sure. I think a lot of people might be excited about, you know, the Tillerson, he's got good relations with Russia. Mm-hmm. A lot of people might be excited about him. He's obviously going to be for the oil and gas industry. A lot of people might be excited about investing in that. I'll kind of turn it over to you.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the problems with a friend is that a friend has a complicated relationship between good policy for oil and gas and good policy for the equity shareholders. Why? Well, because pick deregulation, for example, that could really soften the commodity prices. You know, so there's a complex relation for the companies themselves. You know, you have an inbound EPA head, Oklahoma AG Scott Pruitt, who I think is going to refocus environmental concerns on clean water, clean mm-hmm. air, get out of a lot of the areas that I think he sees mm-hmm. As kind of marginal for the EPA. Could be very good for oil and gas consumers, good for production, could soften prices, and so it's unclear that that's kind of investable from the long side as an E&P equity holder. And on the other side, you know, this is what appears to be a protectionist administration, at least the president's rhetoric so far, and that could really hurt the demand side of oil and gas.
Yeah, so I 100% agree with you, and I kind of think back in 2008 when Obama got elected, the one thing that you knew for sure was he was going to support the development of green energy. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about this earlier. If you had invested in green energy back then, all the major players are from 2008 are either bankrupt or massively diluted. Now, in the case of oil and gas, you're talking about much more sophisticated technologies, but it just goes to show, just because barriers are coming down, it generally just introduces a lot more competition. And a lot of competition is not good if you're looking for price for profits. On the protectionist thing, I think it's interesting. I think, and then we'll move on to the Wilton Tillerson thing. But I do think it's interesting that Tillerson, I think he's been a big proponent of free trade. You know, again, running a major oil company, you're a big proponent of letting capital flow wherever it needs to flow. So him plus a lot of the other people Trump's nominating, it does make me think that one of the big things he's going to be pulling back on is kind of the international protection, and there will be some form of free trade, maybe not with China per se, but everyone else is probably going to be okay on the free trade lines.
I hope so. I think on the congressional side, there's a lot of pivoting from some non-economic rhetoric to some more economic ways to change, say, the corporate tax and things that are actually going to be very good public policies that are going to be able to come out of it.
Perfect. So why don't we turn over to the Whitney Tilson, Liz Warren fight? So this started on November 30th. Bloomberg published a piece, Wall Street Wins Again as Trump Chooses Bankers and Billionaires. And they quoted hedge fund manager, and we've talked to him a little bit. I think he's actually your friend, mm-hmm. Whitney Tilson. And Whitney Tilson said in the piece, he said, look, I think Trump's appointing a bunch of bankers to his cabinet. I think this is good overall because he's appointing people from within the system instead of wild cards who will blow the system up. But I do think it means Trump conned his supporters. And the next day, Liz Warren put out a Facebook post that blasted, quote, billionaire hedge fund managers and ripped on Whitney Tilson for getting his way. You know, I'll let you turn over to all the issues with Liz Warren blasting it, and then we can have a discussion if you want.
Sure. Well, one of the first reasons that this was a problematic response is one of the reasons why Whitney Tilson's, in fact, not a billionaire, although he could be someday, is that he's an extremely generous philanthropist, including to a lot of left-wing causes that would be near and dear to Liz Warren's heart.
Yeah. So, look, the first thing he said was, like, look, he's basically a Liz Warren supporter. He supports the CFPB, which mm-hmm. a lot of we're on his email list. He was incredibly pro Hillary Clinton this whole time. He recently paid to hear Liz Warren talk. His wife was in a Harvard Law School class taught by Liz Warren. So it was kind of crazy. And he reached out, pointed all this out. And to date, Liz Warren Warren has refused to take down her post and apologize on this issue. So let's talk about it.
I think one of the problems, too, this really reveals is a problem with the structure of our media right now. Whitney was saying something that I thought was funny. It had a slight amount of nuance to it. He was making a good point in the context of somebody who had just spent 18 months, two or three times a day, attacking in every possible way Donald Trump, supporting in every possible way Hillary Clinton. And he had kind of a fun, flippant comment that he made in the press. And then it gets taken out of context by somebody, Senator Warren, clearly, who read the headline, may have read the first sentence, but didn't think at all about either the context or the couple paragraphs. And then she can create news out of this superficial understanding.
And I think it's concerning on so many levels. Look, one thing Democrats have been blasting Donald Trump for is a man who can be baited with a tweet, right?
Yes.
Well, here Liz Warren almost literally saw a headline and ripped on someone for something that was the complete opposite of what they're going for and what they stand for. You know, it's kind of, if politics is going to dive more and more into the superficial, where getting blasted in headlines and getting retweets, commentary, kind of stirring up fire is the way that you get press and you get more popularity and you gain power, it's very concerning for anything that requires any type of thought or any politician who's trying to be thoughtful and deal in gray areas in an increasingly gray world.
You know, she said that if Trump gets his way, the next 4 years are going to be a bonanza for the Whitney Tilsons of the world. And I would like to say, I sure hope so. I don't know if I am anywhere near as one of the Whitney Tilsons of the world. I think Whitney Tilson's a person, other people. But she said this. But I think it shows a certain sadism to say that what might be good for one individual or one group of people is inherently something that you want to oppose. And I think that it's interesting. I think she represents one kind of side of the Democratic Party. I think Whitney perhaps in some ways represents the other. But it never finishes a sentence to say how something bad comes out of something that's good for hedge fund managers, even in this case, if he doesn't represent what she was trying to represent. But I have a bit of a critique of the defense of Whitney, which is Andrew wrote, Elizabeth Warren condemned...
Not me, Andrew. Andrew Ross Sorkin.
Andrew Ross Sorkin of the New York Times, somebody who I like a lot. I think he's a very fair journalist. And he said Elizabeth Warren condemns the wrong man. There's a certain innuendo that she condemned the wrong man because Whitney is a liberal in good standing. I think that politicians like Senator Warren should be getting out of the condemnation business. I think that you have these powerful organs such as the CFPB, perfect for retribution as soon as powerful kind of state-sponsored groups turn against somebody. And I think that this is one of the great arguments against the kind of government that both Warren and Tilson support, and one of the great arguments for limited government and free markets that are organized horizontally and organized voluntarily, instead of having these kind of race of people such as Liz Warren, kind of above mere citizens who can pick the winners and losers and pick who does and does not deserve condemnation.
Yeah, you know, I'm conflicted on that because while I agree with you, like free markets are the best way to organize everything, I can't help but see something, you know, like the Wells Fargo scandal where they're opening up accounts that people didn't want and they're refusing to shut them down and stuff. I can't help but see that and think like, you know, without a CFPB or something like, there needs to be something done with this. Or, you know, fortunately, we've never been in this situation, but you see some of the predatory practices with payday lending and stuff. And to some extent, I think there should be payday lending, but you certainly see some of the investigative journalism on the predatory practices behind that, or like super subprime auto loans and stuff. And I do think there is some need for it, but the Liz Warren style, you know...
Subject to abuse is my concern.
Yeah, look, both sides are subject to abuse, right? The regulation subject to abuse and the lack of regulation. But I am kind of sick of the Liz Warren style. I saw one speech, I think it was her, she went up there and said like, Wall Street banks made a profit, and all the crowd started booing. It's like, Well, profit's like, everybody needs to turn a profit. There's nothing inherently wrong with a profit. There's inherently wrong with ripping people off to get that. But profit is what everyone should aspire to.
Absolutely. Two of the last little things I took off from the story that were interesting to me. One is that removing the description billionaire was her one little feign towards honesty and the truth here, which is very funny in this political climate where the current president-elect has very liberally used that word for a long time, kind of as a title, you know, billionaire Donald Trump, that he's very wedded to. And so the one thing they got out of this article is to take that word out of it for the sake of precision and honesty. And the last thing I would say, that it's very funny to me how being a liberal often is supposed to inoculate yourself from any charges, regardless of the putative causes of other liberals. Tom Steyer, who is another hedge fund manager, he and his wife, I think, are the two biggest environmentalists I know. They're deeply concerned about it. He absolutely is a billionaire, but despite that, he will not die a billionaire because he gives money away to environmental causes. But he, for a while, invested in aquifers in California that became this big scandal amongst college kids. Divest in Fairlawn. They had a website called Unfairlawn attacking Tom. Sort of from the left. I don't quite see how you can get to the left of him and his wife on environment, but he just owns some golf courses in California. So this does come up from time to time, even attacking hedge fund managers that you wouldn't think that if you understood properly what they were doing, that there'd be room to politicize them. But I guess anything can be politicized.
Perfect. So let's end it there. All the time we have for today. Before we hit our disclosures, just a quick reminder. If you like this podcast, the best way to get more is to recommend us to a friend and get them to start listening. More listeners means we are more likely to keep taping these. So disclosures, Chris, the only thing we really mentioned was Exxon. I don't have a position. I think you mentioned you were short a little bit.
Short a little bit.
Okay, perfect. So that's it for today. And we'll probably talk to you guys later this week or next week.